Comedy Fix. Chris just asked a great question. Chris, ask that question again.
I said, what is context?
Yeah, great. Now we can start the episode.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Jamie. This is Chris and Sam. We're going to talk about context. Why? You don't need to know. Who are we? Well, me, I'm just kidding. Nobody cares. That's the secret about context, is nobody actually cares. I think almost like justification. This is a great episode to have right after justification. Maybe we actually should have even had it before, but we're going to do it this way. I think just context is one of those things that's taught, just pounded into performers' brains. So much so that they forget what it looks like to not have it, and they don't learn how to play without it. And then it becomes this crutch that funnels everybody into these very ham-fisted, spoon-fed kind of scenes. And again, I want the audience to be able to dream. Let's maybe not give them context up top. Maybe let, we never give them any context. You know, they don't know who, what, and where. First of all, why are those the three questions? Why not when? Why not how? You know, we stopped at who, what, and where for some reason. So to me, Sam has said this a lot in our rehearsals, is I have a war with context. And I'm winning, by the way. Context to me, it can be funny. There can be a place for it. But again, it's one of those things where I think it's just over-relied on. And it's done mindlessly, as if you're checking box off that improv scene checklist, which is no way to perform, in my view. So that's my opening diatribe. Chris, Sam, you're on this podcast.
I love the quagmire that is your war with context. Because I don't think you're winning. I think you think you're winning. But I like some context. But I also think it can be overused. And this goes to one of our big bones to pick on this podcast, which is like improv, right? Where people are doing realistic, representative scenes that are supposed to be kind of like sketch. And so because of that, you want to have context. You want the audience to be able to imagine something, to put it on there. I think what you want to do, and what we try to do sometimes, is stuff that's a little bit more out there in some ways. And so we can play a little bit more abstract and without context. I think who, what, where are the questions to ask for context? I don't think you need when. I think that's kind of took into where as sort of like the environment sort of a thing. But I would say this. I think it's easy to have a really bad scene without context, and it's really hard to have a good scene without context. I don't know, Chris, do you agree or disagree with that?
If I'm being honest, I'm having a hard time wrapping my mind around the word context right now. I even had to look it up. Before we started recording, I know what context means. It just isn't one of the key words that pop up a lot in my teaching or training. I think it comes in the way of, Jamie, of like the who, what, where. Yeah, said that a million times. I don't really recall myself ever using the word context in a rehearsal or giving notes. So I'm a little thrown off. Sam, do you want to say something?
Well, I was just going to say, last in our justification episode, you said, you gave an example of a scene where like people don't know what's going on. So you said, like, you're my dad and you're my sister and we're all in our house together having fun as a family this 4th of July holiday, right? Like, that's contextualizing what's going on stage.
I don't know why I really needed that example, though, Sam. Thank you. I don't know why. It doesn't matter. I don't need to justify why I don't fucking know what that word means in this particular setting. I think about like scene painting, right? Or like a we see here a shelf with an old clock and it's stuck on the number on 3 p.m. And over here is a this. Does that fall in the context world of like setting up the world with which we are living or playing in? And if so, Jamie, do you have an issue with something like that when it's a move made for the specific, you know, for the purpose of like really showing, as opposed to like an in scene contextual move, this kind of painting, setting the scene, if you will?
Yeah, well, I think we can think of context, or at least the amount of context, on a spectrum from zero context. We don't know who, we don't know what, we don't know where, why, when, we don't know anything. We know nothing of the context, versus all the other side of the spectrum is the level one scene where you see, "Hi, Mom, you just got home from the factory that you work at every Tuesday. Thanks for making meatloaf. You've been my mom for 18 years now, and you're great." You know, where it's like, it's way too much context, and yeah, it's almost comedic in how too much context it is.
Yeah.
So I think we can think of it on that spectrum. I think that we're often taught to be somewhere in the middle to upper range of context of, yeah, get out the who, what, and where so that we can all get on the same page and improvise. Fine. But it's taught like that's the right way to do it. This is one of those improv things where it's so ingrained that it's like, well, we don't get invited to play with the lack of context. And if we want an, you know, example of lack of context, we can look at the work done by Beckett, where oftentimes we don't know who the people are. We don't know where they are. We don't know maybe even what's going on. It's a lot of, you know, stream of consciousness type dialogue, and not a lot gets explained. And to me, and sure, it's a matter of taste, but to me, Beckett has some of the most interesting, profound work out there, as far as, you know, plays go. So I think we just don't get invited to play on that first half of the spectrum as much as we do on the second half. And context is fine. It in and of itself is not bad. I think it can be abused, and I think it's overtaught and it's overemphasized, but it is not bad in and of itself. I think there's a lot of fun to be had in powerfully withholding context, keeping the audience in suspense for 2 minutes and then labeling something at the end is often a great blackout line, right? And that's just powerfully withholding the context of the scene, keeping the audience guessing, wondering, and answering their question before you leave. You know, like there's a lot of power.
Let me jump in here real quick.
Yeah, please.
Because you said some good stuff there. Remember Sam reminding me one time that, like, I always like use examples in my brain, and the examples are with the worst players who could do it. Do you remember something like that, Sam, where you were like, why would you choose the, like, there are possibilities, you know, there are performance possibilities that are above us, you know, a level one students. But I think because I spend so much time in the classroom, that's where my mind goes. I want to say a couple things here. I really like you saying, Jamie, invited to play on that side of the spectrum, because my initial instinct was, yeah, you can withhold context, Jamie can, and fuck around with it. But the tech startup guy in my class and the medical professional woman in my class who only do improv on Tuesdays from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. for the last 6 months total, they don't really have the capabilities to make a move like that, is what I would have said 100% of the time. I like the idea of maybe they don't have those capabilities because we aren't inviting them to play there. Because I will say it is beneficial, Jamie, it has been, I've seen it be beneficial for newer, less experienced players to set out this information so that that's taken care of and now they can go play. Even saying that, I can hear Jamie in my mind being like, why do they have to have this in order to have the permission to go play? Which I agree with. So everyone, just come with me in my brain. You know, because sometimes an actual mother will call their actual child, honey. That's true. Now on stage, or in a classroom, I should say, with inexperienced improvisers, or less experienced, I should say, somebody says, honey, the woman in the scene assumes this guy is her son. The man thinks that's his wife. Which to me, if that happened to you two on stage, Sam and Jamie, good, let's have fun with this. One thinks he's a child, one thinks he's a lover. For them, it'll often, you know where I'm going with this, it'll stop. The entire play will come to a screeching halt because now everyone's confused. They'll even like look out at me like, I don't know what, you know what I mean? So that's where we start to say, all right, so let's really establish, even though we wouldn't normally say, you're my son, let's go ahead and say that. Let's be clunky at the top now in these beginning levels so you can at least get past that so we can enjoy the relationship with the scene. That said, I wonder, Jamie, had I invited them to play with the less, that might lend itself to fun experiences and experiential improvisation, which we don't do a lot of, because I think my fear is with the experimentation stuff, the more abstract stuff, is that it's going to be void of what my favorite thing is, which is emotional connection. So if one person is a geometrical shape and one person is a color, I still want them to love or hate each other. Look at Sam.
I mean, how can they not love each other? Shape needs a color. Oh my God.
So yeah. I love that, Jamie. Invite them to play. Sorry. I like that.
Yeah. I think it's interesting to sort of say that we could play with context on a thin level, where we just say it's a road with a tree, right? Or we just say like, oh, you're a circle and I'm this thing. Cause I do think you want like a thin veneer of context so that like things can kind of start to coalesce, even if it's not. I think what's interesting here is we're sort of talking about the traffic patterns of context, or like the air traffic controller of like, we are going in this direction. Yeah, as opposed to like, oh no, this is a really interesting like sentence for me to say as a person and a character.
But what type of mind, what mindset do you have to be in, either of you, Jamie or Sam? What type of person are you to think on stage or in a moment, oh, this is a really interesting sentence for me to say as a person? Students are like, they don't even know which way is up. You know what I mean? Like they're not having the wherewithal to be like, oh, like playing with context and like, who am I? And we'll figure it out. They're like, I haven't spoken in public in my life. So maybe I'm going too far down, you know, the spectrum of experience, but I think about that a lot.
I think a sentence with specificity is an interesting sentence. I think that's all that is required.
I love specificity.
I'll take three oysters, make one of them warm.
Yeah. Or even just hand me that book or hand even me that.
Just, yeah, that, take it to the that, next level.
Hand me that Thoreau paperback, please.
Like, hand me that parchment with the German. Whatever. Like the more, I think that's the way, that's the fun way to get into a scene. And then, you know, you don't know where I'm at ordering oysters. Am I at a party? Am I at home? Am I at a restaurant? Am I at a rooftop hotel in downtown LA? Or am I at some shitty place in Malta? You know, it's like, you don't know. And does it really matter? Is that part of the fun, is the discovery of it? And
but that's, Jamie, again,
powerful with holding that information. And maybe we can label it at the end and maybe that's our blackout line. I don't know.
What do you say to students who at the end of the scene go, oh, I didn't, you were the hitman. I thought you were my dad. So they feel like they've failed. And I've heard that conversation a lot, you know, or I will know what's going on as a teacher. And then I'll be like, all right, let's stop. You think he's your dad? Yeah. Tell him who you actually are. I'm the hitman. Right. And what happened was you missed it here, here, and here, right? You can see that. So Jamie, how do we talk? How do we say that's okay? Or
that's how you do it.
What's interesting about that is you're saying like there are context clues, and this is something when you're teaching kids to read that's really important, because they can get very easily lost in books, and so you have to use all these different clues to help them like understand what's going on, and like that sounds like you're just sort of missing the clues that are there, if that makes sense.
100%. I love that. Context clues. Yes. Yes.
See, I think one misconception about context is that it's not mutually exclusive. You can have a dad who's a hitman, and that's a fun scene. Is great. Maybe the person who thought the other performer was their dad was seeing dad-like qualities. They were seeing aggression or alphaness or control, and the other person who is the hitman was expressing those qualities but was doing it with a murderous tone that wasn't picked up on. It's like, why can't, that's a really fun scene, is when you blend the confusion and you find that middle ground, right?
In that example, yes. But I've been in the more painstaking examples of like, I'm doing a show, someone labels me as Steve in the break room. two scenes later, I'm in the same office, but now the person labels me as Bob, their manager. And so now comes this fucking, oh, fuck, you know, someone didn't listen or I didn't listen. I should, you know, and, you know, there have been times in shows where I've stopped the scene and be like to the audience and everybody, okay, couple points here to fucking clean up, right? Because, like, sometimes you just get so bogged down. And then, Jamie, there is power in combining the two at times. Yep, the hitman father. Love that. But there are other times where now you feel like you're doing 98% work to dig yourself out of this context hole.
The justification.
Of to be like, okay, everybody. So the reason why you call me Steve is because I go by Steve on happy hours. But when I'm in a more professional setting with corporate, I go by Bob. And this is, you know, like, that's not a fun place to play for me, if I'm being honest. Or maybe because I haven't looked at it as an opportunity more. I've looked at it as an obstacle to kind of like over justify, figure this out. Maybe there is opportunity, but that's I got to be honest. I don't play there a lot of like, cool. Now I'm, you know, Steve to these guys and Bob to this guy, because they're also doing their own show. So let's be honest, it'd be different if it was just me and Sam. But now I have seven other people on the team who are having their own thoughts about who they are in this office. No one's playing the, like, let's just all get on board with Chris playing two different characters. So it can get convoluted. Yeah. Sorry, that was a lot.
No, you're making great points though, because once again, I think like, good improv's ruining comedy, or like trying to make sense of this world is like really kind of ruining it in a way. No one's ever going to come out of that show and be like, man, that was hilarious what that office manager did, but I thought his name was different two scenes earlier. I don't think that was written, that improv show. I mean, there's so much fun if you skate by that stuff. And I'll also say, I have the same problem with context that I have with justification. You kind of asked earlier, like, what gets me excited to say a line kind of a thing when there's like a paradox or something nonsensical about it. If like Jamie's ordering the cold oyster and the warm oyster at a restaurant, it's like, yeah, I've ordered grilled oysters at a restaurant. Like, it's not that weird. If he's doing that at like my own house party and I don't have oysters, like that's a little bit more weird. And so I, you know, something that I think Jamie's really encouraged me to do is like, bring one piece of the context, and then the other person can add to the confusion by bringing their own piece that doesn't really make sense. And now let's unpack that, because that's going to be the more fun version of this scene.
To me, I like that. And again, it's not no context ever. It's, hey, let's use this with intent, with, you know, with agency. Let's be specific about the context we're deciding to put in, when and what we do, because that's almost like, reminds me of what we were talking about with our justification episode, where it's like, find a piece of context that adds disjuncture to what is happening, and then you have comedy.
You what know, does that mean?
Meaning like Sam's example of, I'm ordering oysters at his house party. You know, if I just order oysters, that's the first line of the scene. And he's like, well, I mean, this is an office meeting. We have carrot sticks on the table. You know, it's like something like that. Like, oh, okay, that's funny. As opposed to if I'm at a fancy hotel or something, yeah, they might have oysters and I can be a demanding patron.
I just, you know, love the guy, Jamie. I love the guy. That's it. I want one note. It's the guy who orders oysters where oysters shouldn't be. I just love that character.
But see, then do you want to know why he doesn't order them?
Right,
or is it just okay that he doesn't? But he
yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I think that's the fun.
I like that, Jamie. And I like that. I think we're all kind of agreeing that this isn't one of those like completely polarizing topics. Like, no, we think some context is good from time to time. It doesn't need to be on that spectrum you said earlier. I think that's nice.
I think sometimes, it's a tool. Yeah. It's a tool, not a requirement, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, I'll give a shout out to a coach I had, Jen Kruger, who would constantly note scenes as like, can it not be 21st century Los Angeles?
Mm-hmm.
Like, can we just be anywhere else in the universe of space and time? And I think that's something to keep in mind too, is that like, if you're going to do who, what, and where, like, why be two roommates in an apartment? Like, that's just, you can
hear,
do
hear.
Anything you want to celebrate that.
Hear. I'm thinking of a student in one of my classes. I almost want to name her because it's a compliment. I will. Her name's Devin Grace. She comes to a lot of my workshops. She'll often do this if somebody gives too much context. She always starts the scene in the middle. she's just kind of busy doing busy work. And then if somebody goes like, honey, it's our anniversary. I made you eggs. She'll go, why are you talking to me like that? And they'll be like, well, it's our anniversary. She'll go, yeah, I know it's our anniversary. Well, what's going on, Steve? And like kind of fuck them up. What she's saying is, I don't need all that. No normal person gives all that context in a line. And I know we said that like earlier, but she plays with that and makes that like a character choice. Do you know what I'm saying? Like she makes it like, oh, you must be hiding something then, or like something else is afoot here, because you normally wouldn't come into the room and say, wife, dinner's ready for our anniversary. So I love that she plays that extra level of that to not just like ignore it or just take it at face value, but to go, what are you actually doing here? Like what's actually being said? I think that's a fun move. So shout out, Devin. Good work. Because, right, I mean, Jamie, do you think that's a valid way to play if people are over contextualizing to say something? Like, in what world is this a thing?
Oh, Sam knows all too well. How many we have a label for that kind of scene is Black Friday.
You know, it wasn't even that much context. I think I just said, like, it's Black Friday and we were in line together.
Who says much. That? Who
I mean, says that? It's Black Friday. Unbelievable. You said your response was no. If I remember correctly. Just out of hand, refused the context. But I think, you know, when people hear about our shows together, the context of our show is that we're doing a show. And I think that's something that I think is missing a lot of times from some of the stuff when people like are trying to invent something on stage. Like you mentioned the scene painting earlier. I don't love scene painting as a thing because it's like, no, there is a context. I'm sitting in an audience. You're standing on stage. You're performing for me. Like that's like a baseline context. And then anything else you put on there is just sort of this fake reality that Jamie can choose to acknowledge or not.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's fun. I mean, we haven't even, I guess we just did, but that is a fun level of context as well, is the actual context versus the pretend context that you're trying to build on the actual context. The actual context is, you know, what happened that day in the world? What news is going on? Who's in the room? How are you dressed? How many people are on stage? Are the lights working? What kind of music did you come on stage to? All of that is the context of the show. And then you build a fake context on top of it. So it's fun to play with those different levels and maybe fuck with them and acknowledge one and ignore the other intentionally, or I don't know. There's a lot more to play with than I think I was ever taught to play with, or that I see people being taught to play with. And I just, as always, would like people to play more with, not played with.
Do you know what I think has shifted for me? Especially during the pandemic and lockdown in my classes, is the goals are different. I genuinely wanted to be on a Herald team. Most people I teach now, I'd say over 90% of the people I teach now, don't know what a Herald is. So the goals have changed. So if the goals have changed, why are we still teaching the same old fucking bullshit? Why don't we just fucking explore now, fucking be weird now, just like, I mean, it's what we've been saying for a long time. It's what, actually, Jamie, it's what you've been saying for a long time, but I just kind of, I don't know. It's just such a fun. And I, by the way, I thought I would be more angry on this side. I'm actually more woo-woo, more lovey on this side. Like, I just like, let's go. I don't know. Fuck it. I don't know. He's the assassin and he's the dad and you kissed him. Fucking let's go. We can. And I'm feeling much more like in love with this art form. I've always been told that improvisation is a living and breathing art form as it like evolves. And I thought that was a fun thing to say or to hear. But to actually be a part of what I consider to be my own personal evolution within this art form is so much fun. And I say all that to be like, yeah, like even with the context stuff, everything felt like prison for such a long time, Jamie. I think we said it one time in our rehearsal. Why is it that I feel bound by the freedom of improvisation? Like that's a weird sentence, right? Like how come if I'm improvising, do I feel so fucking tied up in my options. But no, we can fucking break these.
Absolutely.
And that comes with context as well.
Yeah. Sometimes I would teach class for other teachers and I would just like sub in, and I would see them try to check all these improv boxes that they had been taught, which is good improv. And then to release them from that, you could feel the weight being lifted from them. Just the fun and enjoyed chaos that ensued. That's to me what improv has always been about. So it's fascinating to me that I don't understand why it's not that way. I really don't. I don't understand why there's all these rules and constraints on it unnecessarily. I think rather than teach all these rules and constraints, they can be taught, but I don't think they should be enforced, right? I think they should be taught as tools, take them or leave them, try them on, and then take what works for you and ignore what doesn't. But I think what needs to be taught more of, and I think it's becoming more and more clear, we talked about this with the object work episode, but is playing harder into the confusion, into the ambiguity, into the uncertainty. If there's a contextual confusion because you're Steve and Bob, like, we're taught to not play into the confusion. We're taught to stop, justify, and clarify, make it make sense, and then we can move forward as Steve or Bob, or Steve to this person or Bob, as opposed to just play harder into the confusion. I don't even know what that means necessarily. Just don't try to justify it, play harder into it, because I think that's way more fun. And I think that's really what improv is mostly about, is playing into the uncertainty, right? If you wanted a script, you would be doing normal play acting, right? But you don't want a script because the uncertainty is fun and part of the excitement. So why do we take the uncertainty away by giving you all these rules? I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know if I would say that's why people improvise necessarily. I think that's one reason, is that it's exciting for people to come up with stuff on their feet. I think for other people, there's the ability to perform without necessarily doing as much work as scripted material takes. I think that is part of it for some people. Huh. And I'll push back a little bit. I do think there is a lot of value to good context. And I bring it up a ton, but I actually believe it. Like, genre improv is really successful because people like the context that stuff is set in. They want to go see the Doctor Who show. And I also think that those shows set the performers up for success, because no longer is it, I'm going to get a suggestion of anything at all, speaker, thank you. Now we are doing the speaker show that could be anything from like someone speaking to like the electronics or whatever it is. When you're doing Doctor Who, you kind of know what that structure is going to be. You know, you have to do less of the traffic pattern context clues stuff. You can sort of be a little bit more subtle with it because you're able to assume a lot more. I don't know. It's just kind of interesting to think of, like, yeah, there is anything that's possible, and that's one form of art, but there's also stuff that people like to consume.
Yeah, I guess you can play with it. Like, I think that's the difference for me when it's good or bad, meaning it's bad when you feel like you have to do it and you're locked into doing it, say, in a scene. But it's fun when we explore, like, what we were talking about doing before the world shut down, which was setting up an experience for the audience when they walk into the theater. Oh, we're about to see this type of show. We were talking about handing out, you know, well, I don't want to ruin it too much because we might do it. But just the idea of setting up like a different type of expectation for the audience, and I think there is something fun when you use the tool in a powerful way, not in a way where it's stepping on your throat. Right? You know what I'm saying? We can play with the context. Oh, you thought you were coming to see a normal fucking improv show. We've fucked with the context now and thus fucked with your expectations. I'm going crazy, guys.
No, I agree. I was trying to articulate that earlier. It's like context can be good and useful and fun and, you know, give the scene life. But I think we need to acknowledge that it's on a spectrum and you can choose how much context you want. It's not a requirement. It's just a tool that can be used and deployed and should be used and deployed with specificity, with intent behind it, so that you can get the most out of it, as opposed to who, what, and where, and then you can start the scene. which is how it's taught. Why? I mean, that's a bad habit in my view.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think you have to get eight people, many of them strangers, to all be able to communicate with each other. And I think you're going to get really obvious stuff like that. As you're talking, though, I'm reminded of the Dragatha Christie show that you guys did. And, like, there's nonverbal context clues, right? Like, putting on a costume, it's very clear what kind of character I'm going to be. We don't necessarily have to say anymore, well, Jack, you're a businessman of a middle-class white-collar job. Like, if you're wearing a suit on stage, people might kind of assume some of those things. So are there other examples of, like, nonverbal context that we can provide? Is it how we work on stage or set up the stage?
I mean, even along those lines of the costume, right? You look at someone like Second City and they're promote, like, white shirt, black pants, black tie for all their reviews. Kind of sets up this kind of like professionalism, whatever, versus if you walk into a jam, right, and like shorts and stuff, I feel like that would get, that would clue me into what type of evening or what type of what type. But that's interesting, though. That's actually interesting, because if I went to a Folly show and you guys are just doing a festival circuit, say, and I saw you guys in Oklahoma and you were both wearing cargo shorts and Teva sandals, I would be like immediately done with you guys. I'm like, ugh, I don't want to see this. Like, the context is letting me know that this is like the style I don't like. Is that right? Is that a correct sentence? Or is that just me making, is that me just making judgments? I don't know. I don't know. But yeah. I don't know. But I just think that there's something with costume or even just the way you present yourself. Is there something to that? These snap judgments we might make.
Absolutely. That's that meta context we were talking about. It's like, what kind of music do you come out to? You know, what time is your show at? Where's the theater in the city? You know, all these kinds of things. What are you wearing? How far are the chairs? Are there chairs on stage? Do you need to bring the chairs out when you perform? Or like, all these things are contexts or context clues into what is about to happen.
So, just real quick, because I don't know why I'm having a hard time with the word context, but I mean, I know what it is, but I think this is interesting. If you go, hey, I have a show Friday night. Right now your head's going through it, right? Like, I'm in, I'm out, right? You know what I mean?
Why are you saying it so weird?
Well, because I'm trying to set up an example. 8 p.m. So again, to me, it's context. Because if you say Tuesday at midnight, I'm thinking one thing, right? 8 p.m. at, and I think this is the big one, you know, where? Friday, 8 p.m. at UCB Franklin. Okay. Friday, 8 p.m. at Danny's Coffee Shop in Koreatown. Oh, boy. Right? I think that's interesting, too, like that context of like, where am I even going to see the show? When and what time?
Okay. Yeah. No. But I think if you want to break context down, if you wanted more of a definition of it, is I think it's information that gives you a certain set of expectations, you know. I think that's what context is. So Friday night, 8 p.m., UCB Sunset, you might think, oh, probably a pretty good show, pretty solid lineup, right? That's a nice spot. Midnight in Koreatown, I might be sick that night, you know, kind of thing. Like, so I think that's what context is. It's just information that gives you certain expectations, which is why I think it should be used and deployed specifically and powerfully, is because it gives the audience expectations, which you then can undercut, play against, reverse, undo. It's like, use the context with intent, and then it can become this really great tool. It's just right now it's, Mr. Johnson, I got a bad grade on my report last night. I'm sorry about that. I was up all night with my dog who was throwing up because he ate my sister's doll. My mom's been working a lot, so I had to babysit her. It's like, I guess that's fine, but like all of that just kind of like bounced off of you, you know, as opposed to each one of those pieces of information, if you deployed it specifically, could be powerful in that moment, you know. Mm-hmm. Once the expectations were allowed to develop, then you can undercut them or reverse them. So it's just Mr. Johnson, expectations are now growing of who that could be, and then you can play with them, as opposed to that whole log line of bullshit. It kind of rings hollow.
But, you know, I guess it also depends on how you play with the information being provided. Because if you say that long thing you just said to Mr. Johnson, and I'm Mr. Johnson, and I just go, after you said all that, I go, Red Starburst are the best, right? like that's kind of fun to like fuck with that as well. Not intentionally fuck with that, but like this character has their own thoughts and ideas of what's important to them.
It's like, yes, Mr. Johnson, that's what my report was about. I argued that specifically in my thesis. Can I pass the second grade now?
I mean, why is candy so bad for you?
Did you not read the third part of the body of the paragraph? Was that candy is bad because it makes me happy. Your chance of dying. But it increases your chance of
being alive is to be happy.
I agree, which is why I'm trying to move on to the next level so I don't have to go to school anymore. What I want to be is a rock star.
All right, don't talk so loud. I have this office covered with very thin, thin paper walls.
I know. I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to. I dynamited the previous classroom, but that was also part of my previous thesis, which you threw out, by the way.
Sorry, I lost it.
It was a fascinating scene when Jamie justified the paper walls by blowing up the previous classroom. That was special. That was a good one.
Thanks.
Yeah. I'm wondering how much context can be applied after the fact. Like, if we have three people doing stupid shit on stage, and after 30 seconds of their stupid shit, someone came out and said, modern air travel. Does that contextualize the dumb shit that we just saw, or is that just like putting a label on it for shits? I don't know.
I think both. I think that's what I was saying is like you could have that ambiguous world and develop that tension with the audience, and then you break the tension by labeling what they just saw. It breaks the tension. You probably will get a laugh no matter what you said, to be honest, because the tension is probably so built up at that point, and that's probably going to be your blackout line. Doing something afterwards, after that, might be more challenging. Because then do you immediately drop what you were just doing to now play what you were just labeled as? Or do you just keep doing it until you get blacked out another minute later?
I think that's a word that is used a lot more than the word context is labeling.
It's the same thing.
It's the same thing. I just fucking recognize that this very moment. That is used constantly. Labeling your scene partner, labeling the where, labeling where you, what's going on. Yeah, that's really interesting. That's really, you know, we see that, we used to see that with like organic games or, you know, where it's like, or like the machine, chuga, chuga, and I go up and I go down and you touch this and you touch that and this one, this and this one, that. And then someone comes out and goes, like Sam says, right? Modern air travel, or, you know, dinner's done, or, you know, like labeling, contextualizing. Interesting. Interesting. Again, I wonder if this doesn't go back to my very loose theory of like all improvisation has been taught to do the Herald. Because, you know, 8-9 people on any given night trying to do this piece that has a lot of pieces to it. I'm not saying this eloquently enough. Like labeling and names and context is probably helpful when you're on the side, when you're on the wings of a stage being like, okay, I'm going in the second beat to do this thing with this game. I might walk onto this scene. I got to listen here. So make sure they say Steve a lot, Steve a lot, Steve a lot. Cause if I only hear Steve once and I'm thinking about my other shit and how I'm going to tie this up in the third beat, I might call him Bob. So I think maybe a lot of this shit is so people can fucking have it, do a better Herald.
Bummer.
my fiance just opened the office doors. I just screamed to do a better Herald. I never felt more like an idiot in my life. I love you. Do you love me? I talk about the Herald. Okay. Sorry, guys.
She's gone. I agree. And that's one of my fascinations with, I mean, society and with improv. I think it happens that, blah, 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 I'm not saying anything eloquently at all right now. But the order in which things transpire and then the way things are taught, like we talked to Craig about this. I'm like, you know, how has improv been affected by the fact that there's 8 people in a class versus 3, you know, now you're taught improv differently just based on the number of people in the class. If it was just a 2 people in the class and it was just 2 people and the coach, that's a very, very different experience. And you can unlock very different avenues of performance than you can with a class of 12. So I think that's part of it, is the order in which things happen, because Dell was this bigwig somehow marketing. And he had the Herald, and the Herald got brought into UCB, and UCB became very popular. Now that's become like, that's affected the culture. And I feel like part of, hopefully, the goal of this podcast is to undo some of the assumptions of improv culture and maybe open it up again for exploration and such.
Yeah, it's interesting to think how much the Herald as a concept has probably influenced everything we do, at least as far as like improv goes. I'm trying to think if there's something analogous to other art, right? Like French cooking, or everyone learns how to play in a band at school, like classic music or whatever. But then everyone always kind of goes off and sort of brings in their own culture or finds music that they end up like. And so like, yeah, everyone gets taught how to do the scales, but then there's the guy in the corner on a modular synthesizer doing micro tuning and stuff like that. And so what are we missing in the culture in some ways that we don't do a lot of the micro tuning stuff, and we're all just kind of still practicing the basic scales?
I think it's going to take one of us three to become famous and shine a light on the other ways, the new way. I really believe that. I think people were going to be famous regardless of their time in improvisation, like Amy Poehler, who's just like a talent, just funny and great. Fucking third beats of a Herald didn't make her funny or great. She was going to be funny or great anyway, in my opinion. But because she was attached and associated with this fucking Herald, well then, you know, I mean, same thing I.O. I.O. used to have those sad portraits of like Seth Meyers and Chris Farley, like painted all horribly to associate themselves with fame and then be like, if you want to be like them, come here and train here. What do we do here? The Herald. That's what they did. And it's just this fucking cycle of bullshit. So once Jamie becomes super famous, then he's in a shine of light on this whole other way. But you know, I wonder, Sam, can this other school of thought find the popularity that the Herald did? Like true popularity. Obviously, there's been people experimenting with improvisation since its inception. So it's not like people haven't been doing other things other than the Herald. But will there be a time, you know, in the next fucking decade where people are like, oh, I'm doing the Blarzo. Oh, you do the Blarzo? Yeah, I'm actually, you know, Chris Alvarado, him and Sam Miller, they invented the Blarzo. You know what I mean? What's the Blarzo? Well, there's no context almost ever. We don't. Yes. You know what I'm saying, Sam? Like, can that also be packaged, or is that part of the problem? Is the idea we're trying to smash all the packages forever and make this as thin and small as possible, but then, in my opinion, also reaching less and less people to ever come to a show?
Fuck.
It's a good question. And, you know, I'm biased now. I've been in Philadelphia for the last like 7 months and there's not a ton of improv here and world shut down, but like there, I saw my first live in-person show a month ago. That was like an improvised movie. They're doing it again this month, like tonight actually. And I'm like, oh, I kind of want to see that, 'cause that's my one chance. They have another show that's like, an Armando, but the speaker monologist is a like a professor type. It's like a study hall or whatever they call it, where it's sort of based on intelligent topics because it's sort of a college town. There are a lot of colleges around here. People read books a lot. And then they sort of do the comedy that way. And so what's interesting is there are musicians who are like, I'm doing music for musicians. Like I'm doing this just for musicians. But I think there are also a lot of like DJs who just make dance music, just because like people want to dance, and so that's what they're doing. And so it's like, if we want to make people laugh, I think it's okay to go meet people and be like, yeah, we're going to do a silly show to make you laugh. And maybe part of that silliness is not the context of these are the five people on stage, right? It can be a little bit more silly, wacko, and weirdo to make people laugh a bit. I don't know. I guess that's my long-winded way of saying, even when I was in LA, no one was like, do you want to go to Herald Night? Unless they were a teacher in an improv class, right? Like you would say, let's go see ASCAP because Amy Poehler is going to be there this week. But yeah, I don't know if the Herald's coming back the same way. It'll be interesting.
What's interesting about what you guys are saying is making me think that, yeah, because to me, my performance goals and the goals with being on this podcast is to increase people's freedom and originality to do new things. I would love that. But it strikes me that people aren't interested in that. It's like people are not attracted that often to like freedom or to doing something from nothing. They want the structure. It's like moths attracted to the light. It's like they don't fly to the darkness where there's nothing. They fly to the light that's on in the room. And that's kind of what I feel like with forms and structures like heralds. It's like, oh, people are attracted to the herald. It's a thing, as opposed to people are attracted to the absence of something. It's almost too abstract to comprehend.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
And I wonder if on the one hand, there needs to be some of that, we talked about this before, some of the level of training and understanding in order to then break off. But in my own workshops, I guess most people have had previous improv experience. Not all. Some are just straight actors. We are finding a new way to play, Jamie, and it's fucking great. It's fucking great. But I wonder if I am not now my own light for moths to come to. That sounds weird, but meaning we're not just like in a dark void, just like making sounds, right? Like I have like introduced a new way to.
Yeah. You have the Chris Alvarado style that certainly would be considered like a light for people to fly into.
But you know, like I started surfing during the pandemic. I'm such a bad surfer. I watch every video and want to learn every rule and every tip. And it's so funny because when I see the rules and tips of improv being promoted, I'm like, don't do that. But maybe, I don't know if it's different because it's a physical sport. I don't know. But there's no way, Jamie, I'm going to be like, what if I rode the surfboard upside down?
Why not? Right?
Like, I know. Sam likes that.
Why not?
Because I mean, maybe for the same reason that nobody else wants to try the improv the other ways, maybe it's fucking afraid. We're afraid of looking like we don't know what we're doing, afraid of looking dumb, afraid of failure, afraid of all of it. But if there's a way, if there's a surf camp for $3,000 in Nicaragua, that'll teach me how to do it. And we can even watch game tape. Oh, yeah. But there are some surfers that would be like, that's the wrong way to approach this. It should be you, your board, the ocean, and go. Which is kind of what we're saying. And I'm kind of like, so is there a school where I can pay a lot of money to be taught a certain way how to surf? Because I'm in for that. So I'm in the same boat. I'm in the same boat. No pun intended there. The water works. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Man, did we break this one too? Jeez.
We're doing though? I don't give a shit. Every time we break this stuff, every time it's almost more confusing than when we entered, it's actually not more confusing. It's just, to me, it's more enlightening, and I'm speaking highly of this podcast and our conversations. It's because the problem is when you think you already know. That's the fucking issue. When I'm like, well, here, I know why context is important. That's when you limit yourself to the fucking exploration and the freedom and the fucking artistry. I think this is the way I ended the last podcast, but it's true, right, Jamie?
You reminded me of a point that I wanted to make that I forgot. But yeah, is... It, to have like to so if the herald is the prevailing form, whatever it is, a lot of people, and I think Greg Tinsdale was making this argument when he was on. If you want to, like, he was, you know, taking down the trickster, he was challenging the trickster mentality of performance or of existence, wherein he said, if you want to basically, and it's the argument many people make, if you want to destroy a structure, you have to have something to replace it. It's like, well, I think that's an incorrect assumption. You don't need to take down the herald to bring in the Armando, because then you just kick the can down the road. It's like Sam's justification of, why do you like pizza? Because I love Italian stuff. It's like, okay, so you got rid of one and you just moved it to another. It doesn't fix the problem. It just changes the conversation, but the problem still exists. And so I think the challenge is, if you're going to turn off the light, if we're using that metaphor, if you're going to turn off the light, you can't turn another one on, you know, or you can't be, people can't expect you to turn another one on, because that doesn't solve the problem. Then the moths just fly to that part of the room, as opposed to if there's no light, then you go wherever you want. And that's the freedom that I'm trying to have. This is a beautiful, beautiful metaphor. And I think we should change the podcast art to a moth and a light, but.
Ooh.
Isn't the moth a form for like storytelling?
Oh, oh yeah. Fuck.
Yeah.
Jesus. All right. Never mind. You know what?
No, but just... I think you are right that people like structure. I certainly find myself drawn to structure in a lot of ways. I'm curious for Chris's workshop, like you, my understanding is like you're basically doing two-person scenes on Zoom. And I'm curious how Zoom has changed context for you, because I find when I'm performing like in a class on Zoom, my context is now like the box that's my screen. Like I'm really not exploring the space I'm in. I like maybe I'm holding up one thing as a prop kind of a thing. But I also now I'm sort of saying like, well, is Zoom kind of contextless and that's okay? I don't know. Where are you with that, Chris?
It's funny. I mean, I'm having the same experience, right? Somebody will hold up a pen every now and then that'll actually be a pen or it'll be a cigarette. To me, it's been a fucking great exercise in saying, okay, we're kind of not pretending that we're anywhere together for real. Like, we're not – fine. We can say we're at a diner, but I don't give a shit. Let's strip all of the all of the context away. Fuck, I hope – I don't know why I'm tripping over this word. It's our whole subject today, but – let's strip it all away and let's just shoot emotion into each other's mouths. you know, yeah. Okay. So you know what I've been doing is sometimes I'll say, all right, the word is Cadillac and I'll see five scenes based on Cadillac just as a point of inspiration. Or sometimes I'll give them a lot of context for fun. Like the way I did it with the Groundling show, Cooking with Gas. It's kind of cool. Like we said, it's kind of fun to be like, all right, I'm going to tell you that you're actually brothers in a donut shop at midnight. There is something fun to play with that as well. But I don't know if I'm answering your question, Sam, but I will say this. I'm looking forward to getting in person because I have done one in person. I did one in person rehearsal last week, and it's with people that have not been to my workshop. So I was a little, I don't know what the word is. I was a little like scared because when I walked into that rehearsal, I was like, hey, everybody. Wow, look at us. Couple things. I've changed. The way I feel about the work I do has changed. My relationship with this work has changed. That said, I was your coach before everything shut down and I had a different philosophy. That philosophy is changing and hopefully will change again. I'm not here to thrust my opinions upon you or shove them down your throat. I'm going to let you know how I feel and what I think. But if that's not what we want to work with here, no problem. Because like that's not fair for them, right? People who haven't been doing fucking crybaby workshops for the last 16 months, which I have been. It's not fair for me to be like, all right, let me tell you something, gentlemen. Again, Sam, sorry I didn't answer your question. Let me just finish up this story here. I didn't know what was going to happen. I was afraid that I would be too much or they wouldn't be enough or they would be too much in one way and I wouldn't be enough another way. And instead what happened was like what one of the players sent me a private message saying, the best work this team has ever done. Because I said, hey guys, again, it's not the rule, but I want to throw this out there. What if it didn't matter? What if there were no more rules? What if we didn't have to do any of the things we've been told we had to do this entire time? And yes, I even said, I know that sounds like very like fucking Dead Poet Society, you know, oh my captain. But I said, like, I've also been doing this for 16 months. Like, it's not just, I'm like, here's a radical idea, no rules. No, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying like, what if when you were in a scene, you actually got to think about the things you wanted to think about and not the things you think you're supposed to be thinking about. And I'm telling you guys, it was a beautiful fucking rehearsal. That was funny, by the way, and weird, by the way. And of course, heartfelt and crybaby, because that's the Alvarado way. It fucking worked. I kept getting goosebumps and they kept laughing at me and I kept saying, I thought this was going to go much worse. You know what I mean? It's so fucking cool. It's so fucking cool. I think it's fucking going to work. And now the last thing I want to say here on this fucking rant is, Jamie, I am at odds with myself. I am battling myself because I ultimately want to have a studio. All right. I'm going to make that very clear. I want to have the Chris Alvarado fucking performance studio. And I am, on the one hand, I want to be successful as a businessman. I want to be successful as a coach and director and teacher. But I'm afraid, Jamie, of falling into just being another light, and not in like that like shining light, great way of like another school of thought. And as a matter of fact, as I'm working on the copy of how I'm trying to promote this class and this studio idea, I'm getting caught up because it's like, come to a place where you do improv, but it doesn't have to be funny, but can be funny, but there are no expectations unless you want to be, but no rules except the ones you want to use. You know what I mean? It's hard to get it all in there and not just be completely woo-woo.
Maybe you can be, instead of like a bright light bulb, maybe you can be a soft light that lights the whole room, that allows the moths to go wherever they want to. So you're still a light, but you're a light that allows them to do whatever they want.
Sam, thoughts on that? Oh, he's not buying it.
Yeah, I was going to say like a flickering candle, you know, dancing around.
Yeah. Oh, maybe that'll be my logo. Nothing says a good time like an old-timey flickering candle.
Fine.
I think you should just call it the Crybaby Workshop. And people know exactly.
I was
going to
say, that's the strongest thing I heard.
That's the best thing I've heard so
those,
far.
Those are your levels. Is Crybaby, Badass, Mean Guy, and Funky. It's like, those are your levels.
Boy, there could be worse ways, though, to teach improv than like, all right, in this level, we're just going to cry. You're going to be a crybaby.
Yeah, no
your
shit.
Your next level is a terrible toddler stage, okay? I just want you to be an angry toddler. Like, there'd be some fun scenes.
Oh, yeah. What if the entire training center takes like about 5 years, by the way, to complete it? And it's like, we're going through all the stages of life. So for the first fucking 14 months, you'll get to talk.
That's great. That's great. You know, it's gibberish. It's crawling around. It's physicality. That's wonderful.
Falling.
That's right. And then and then you see where that goes.
And then you die, which means you leave the studio.
Oh, you died
on stage.
Well, fun, everybody. Join the Chris Alvarado Baby Studio.
Wow. Well, yeah. This is good. This is good. I think I'm still confused, but I think I'm a little less confused. And I don't know why the word context fucked me up so hard, but thank you. Thank you, smart boys, for always helping me. Oh, Sam, the people don't know that you just panned your camera to the side and now you're showing us a big, beautiful dog.
Yeah, my dog's just looking out the window. Which is like, what is he thinking about looking out the window? I don't know.
We don't need to.
Going back to the bathroom.
We don't need to figure that out, right, Jamie?
We don't. Nope. We just need to know nothing.